Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome back to Pediapod for March 2024. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by two of my esteemed paediatric research colleagues, Cynthia Behrer and Eleanor Molloy, who are here to give us an update on our plans for the podcast and to offer some sage advice for early career investigators. Cynthia, why don't you start us off by introducing yourself?
Hi, I'm Cynthia Behrer. I'm the Division Chief of Neonatology here at Rainbow Babies and Children's Hospital and a professor at Case Western Reserve University. I'm also Editor-in-Chief of Pediatric Research. I'm a neuroscientist and also an environmentalist. And so I look at how the environment impacts on fetal development and in particular, the brain. I also do some clinical research in our NICU looking at factors in the environment that may be environmental hazards, as well as things that promote development.
Okay, so you're one half of my screen, and the other half is Eleanor. Could you introduce yourself, please?
So, hi, my name's Eleanor Molloy, and I am a paediatrician and neonatologist based in Dublin in Ireland, and I'm the chair of paediatrics in Trinity College Dublin, but I work in Children's Health Ireland. I was lucky to be a fellow in Rainbow Babies, and I've known Cynthia for some time. My research interest is understanding inflammation and how we can modify it to improve outcomes for preterm babies. So similar to Cynthia, we have research labs as well as clinical research. And then I'm the Associate Editor-in-Chief of Paediatric Research, representing the European side of the journal.
Listeners might have noticed that the Pediapod has changed from focusing solely on early career investigators to a kind of rotating rota of different types of episode. And I wonder if you could just speak for under a minute on what they are and on what the thinking behind that was.
So we decided that just having early career investigators on the Pediapod, now that we've been doing it for a couple of years, might be more informative if we spaced them out and included the look back from the senior investigators who have really made it. You know, their stories are very inspiring and could give ideas to people coming along on their pathway as to how to manage that.
And Eleanor, there's also these what's hot in certain specialties in pediatric research. What was the thought behind that genre?
I think because we're a journal that covers every single area of child health and pediatrics and every specialty and every part of the body, we've gone to our experts in the sections and asked them to record sections on what's hot in their area. And we're starting with endocrinology as our first one.
So listeners have that to look forward to. And finally, there are these collections episode, of which today is one. And we've already done one on global climate change, and today is advice for early career investigators.
Well, we recognized that there was a need amongst those people who had just sort of started out on their research careers, because I would say something in a group of colleagues at meetings, and folks who were new to the field would like light up and go, wow, I didn't know that. So I got together with Eleanor, and we brainstormed about it and decided that we would start writing an editorial series on things that we felt were the real pearls of kind of getting your research career off and started and putting that online so it was available for everybody who can get to the journal. And that sort of was the beginning of it.
Absolutely. And we have a collection. If you look onto the website, you can see a collection, and we have five short editorials so far, including advice for doing a PhD, willingness to risk failure, data management, unexpected life skills, as well as ways of getting grants. So we're hoping that those are part of a longer series. And we've looked throughout the pediatric community for the absolute experts in these areas and to give career advice to improve the quality of research and outcomes for the early career investigators.
It strikes me this isn't really like a one-off. Helping early career investigators seems to be kind of part of the DNA of paediatric research as a journal.
Yes. Our mission statement is really kind of broad, but it's always been focused on developing that next generation of pediatric researchers. And for that, we're targeting this particular group to give them more of the tools and the skills to navigate that career choice.
And so, as is always the challenge with Pediapod, it's cramming a lot of information into under 10 minutes. So obviously, we'll just point listeners towards the collections. But let's just dig into some of those that you mentioned, Eleanor. Why don't we just pick two or three to chat about together today in this episode?
Well, one of the things that we really noticed is that a lot of our early career investigators have done so well. They've gone into science or medical school. They've thrived. They've passed all their exams. And suddenly they come into the academic field. And this is when it's the first time they fail in exams or in publishing and so on. And we feel this is kind of core in all our careers so far. So we have an article on willingness to risk failure.
So willingness to fail, you think that's a crucial part of being an investigator, Cynthia? Has that been your experience?
Yes, simply. This sort of stems from my experience of being a grad student. And the president of Princeton University wrote a similar editorial in the journal Science. And I read that, and it was very informative for me when I was an up-and-coming beginning researcher. And actually, the other person who has really examined and explored this area is J.K. Rawlings. She gave the commencement address at Harvard and referred to failing. She was a failure before she wrote Harry Potter, or some people would have said that she was a failure. And so this article really explores, well, what does it mean to fail? And how do you look at that failure? You know, Edison said, if, you know, it was 1,000 more ways he learned how not to make a light bulb. Not only having the negative, like, fail stuff, but turning it around as a positive is a very powerful thing. I actually think it's a very meaty topic.
I wonder if we should talk about failure more on the podcast, because we've probably given a very biased impression of research on Pediapod, because it's always highlighting either an early career investigator or some of these amazing senior investigators who have had huge impact in their field. And obviously, in under 10 minutes, you focus on their successes, don't you?
Actually, it would be very interesting, I think, on the senior Pediapods to ask them, what was their biggest failure? And how did they respond to that? How did they turn it into a success?
Eleanor, did you mention another article on how to get through a PhD?
Absolutely, because we had recognized that a lot of people are an expert at doing a PhD when it's completed, but just as they start off, it's a little bit difficult to navigate. So we made up the 10 golden rules, really just trying to recognize how important doing the research is and how to select their area of research and supervisors, and just the importance of keeping their life on track and thinking about their external life and, again, coping with failure. I think as well, we noticed that especially for clinicians, that transition to being in the lab and having that time to do a project that's less directed than, say, a clinical job can be really difficult for people. And they're not used to not having their day filled with clinical duties. So I think it was to really reassure them that the beginning is hard, but it's worth it in the end. And then ultimately, the last thing we say is enjoy it.
And I can see our time limit ticking away. Cynthia, is there anything else you'd want to highlight from the collections before we just point people towards the website?
Just, I think that it's really going to grow. We'd love to have suggestions about other topics that early career investigators would find helpful, or even if they're not early career investigators anymore, suggestions about what helped them get successful in their role. We have several in the pipeline right now. A couple are based on our very popular workshops at PAS, such as how to get published, how to do a good review, those kind of very mundane but necessary skills that people develop.
Maybe it would be worth ending on thoughts from both of you on, is now a good time to be an early career investigator in pediatrics?
Well, right now in the United States, it's very difficult. We have a federal budget that funds NIH, you know, it's sort of a trickle-down effect. And my understanding is that the federal budget is held up in our government system and has not been passed through the legislature. And so NIH does not have a budget yet for this year. And so it's really hurting our early career investigators as well as more senior investigators, because we can't get any of our research grants funded until we know what the budget is. NIH doesn't want to give money away that they're not going to have if the budget doesn't pass. So for early career investigators, my advice would be to look at other sources of funding to keep your lab going. There are a number of foundations that are very focused on neonatology, which is a good place to apply. There's also a lot of usually in-house, like local grant sources that you can find. There'll be small grants that are there for pilot studies. There'll be maybe more major ones, like University Hospitals has the Harrington Research Institute that has grants. A lot of places in the U.S. also have the CTSC units, which is Clinical Translational Science Collaboratives, and they also have funds to promote research projects.
And Eleanor, what's the European picture?
It would be a little bit similar, I'm afraid. And we are noticing that less and less pediatricians have their own kind of research lab, but they do a lot of collaboration with scientists. But I think it's really important that as clinicians who actually go from the bedside, that we can actually go to the lab and try and understand what's going on and work really closely and train all our trainees so that they actually know what scientists do as well. And I think that really builds strong relationships in the future. But I would have to say resilience and perseverance. And as Cynthia said, diversify, follow the money a little bit, because that's going to really help you. And it's been, and I also follow what you really love, as in if you're doing a clinic, I'm thinking of my clinics for babies with Down syndrome, that's where you're going to follow your research. And as well as that, I think work with people you get on with really well and make it fun. And my last thing I was going to say actually is I would really encourage people to look at the lovely biocommentaries from the early career investigators, because we've had the pleasure of reading them, but they're very inspiring and thoughtful, and they give fantastic advice about how to develop your career. And they also show they're a very diverse group of ECIs, and they've come from so many different areas.
And I would also just add to that and plug the handful of senior investigator episodes that we've made on the podcast, because they were also very illuminating, weren't they?
Yeah, they're fantastic.
Yes, they are.
Any other thoughts before I finish this call?
I would like to encourage people to submit their articles. We definitely like original research articles. Most of the articles are original research, but there are a lot of other types of articles that we're interested in publishing. Review articles are always welcome, but we have editorials, we have correspondence, we have commentaries, and we have a new section called Insights, which includes families who may want to comment on the impact of research on a disease that has affected their family. Or if you have a poem, we publish poems, we publish artwork. So even if you're not a researcher, you can still be published. We also publish policy statements and a policy commentary from the Pediatric Policy Council. So we're very interested in, yes, the research, but what does the research mean? And we have a way of extending that into kind of real life, out of the lab or out of the clinical setting or whatever, and into the mainstream and developing and changing policy.
That was our Editor-in-Chief, Cynthia Behrer, and Associate Editor-in-Chief, Eleanor Malloy. Thanks both. And that's it for this episode. Please join us next month for a look at what's hot in pediatric endocrinology. I'm Jeff Marsh. Thanks for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.